and welcome to this episode of Smarter, a podcast by clinicians for clinicians, brought to you by Mater, an Australian leader in healthcare for more than a century. My name is Gillian Whiting.
And I'm Ash Mondolo, breast care clinical nurse consultant at the Mater Private Hospital, Brisbane.
And we're coming to you from Meanjin, the land on which this podcast is being recorded. Today we're joined by Arwen Warner, a clinical psychologist at Mater Hospital, Brisbane.
Arwen is a clinical psychologist with over 15 years' experience in private practice, community and the hospital setting. She joined Mater in 2020, first with Mater at Home and then with the Mater Adult Hospital.
She's one of six psychologists who provide support for inpatients and outpatients in the adult hospital for patients coping with medical conditions. Arwen's primary caseload is women's cancer, and she's passionate about supporting women who come to the Mater for treatment.
Today she's joining us to talk about the social and emotional challenges after cancer treatment, self-esteem, self-image, and the path to recovery.
We are Mater.
We are Mater.
We are Mater.
This is Smarter.
Arwen, welcome to Smarter.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start by setting the scene. A patient has just finished cancer treatment. From your perspective, how would they be feeling?
Sometimes there's relief, you know, obviously, that they don't have to go through treatment anymore. But I think there can be a lot of mixed feelings. So there can be fear. There can be a bit of disbelief, you know, a sort of numb feeling about, you know, is this all real? There can be, you know, excitement and, you know, anticipation of getting back into life again. But there can also be a lot of, you know, emotional turmoil. So lots of different things.
We often see people grappling with their expectations of how they're going to feel when they've finished their cancer treatment.
Yeah.
And often that's different to how they think life will be after cancer treatment.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah, definitely. It's a really common thing. I think there's a lot of build-up to finishing treatment. Cancer, being diagnosed with cancer, presents a major threat to a person's survival. And so all of their resources are geared towards coping. And that's their main focus, getting to the end. So it's like running a marathon and getting to that finish line. And so often people might not realise the emotional recovery that needs to happen after finishing treatment. Our brain prioritises our resources, and so it focuses mainly on physical well-being and survival and actually just meeting all of those tasks. And often the emotional processing might be, you know, suppressed or delayed because a person just doesn't have the mental space or energy to process that. And it's only when a person is in a state of safety, you know, when that threat has abated, that some of those other emotions can actually rise to the surface, and then a person can start actually understanding how they're feeling about the whole big picture. And so that can come as a shock. People may think, I'm going to feel so much better when I finish treatment, and then are surprised, you know, a couple of months down the track saying, I actually feel worse than I did before and I don't understand why.
For a clinician supporting a patient who has just finished cancer treatment,
yeah,
how should they approach it and what signs should they be looking out for?
Unlike treatment, which can be quite, you know, sort of regimented, there's a clear plan, there's expected treatment side effects, the emotional landscape of recovery and also the physical processes of recovery are really individual. And so I think it's important to let people know that that's normal. People are often surprised, you know, when they experience something they don't expect, and then that can make them feel, you know, things are not okay. I'm not, you know, things aren't going to plan. Maybe there's something wrong. So I think having a safe, secure relationship where patients feel comfortable to express their concerns, and so then clinicians can, you know, let them know what's not okay, what's not normal, and what actually might be quite, you know, understandable in their situation.
We know that not everyone's cancer journey and treatment is the same,
yeah,
and that every cancer journey is different.
Yeah.
Is there a particular group of people or women who seem to struggle the most post-treatment?
Yeah, certainly. We know that there's a profile of risk and protective factors. And so some of the women who may be at greater risk of poorer psychological adjustment are women who've had more invasive treatment, so where there's been more significant changes to their body, so particularly women who've had double mastectomies. Women who've had to have other kind of, you know, sort of physical changes like an ostomy formation, if they've had significant side effects of treatment, so an adverse, you know, sort of treatment course, which is like really aggressive, or where their body has not coped well, that really undermines a person's resilience. And then they're sort of, you know, behind the eight ball when they're finishing treatment. There are also, you know, we look at the biological, psychological and social profile of a person. So there's the biological, the physical effects, the psychological state. So if they've experienced trauma in the past or had, you know, psychological difficulties which has made them vulnerable, they might find it harder to adjust. Or if their social environment is not as supportive to help them, you know, have that emotional support and that reassurance that things are going to be okay. I think in addition, you know, women who are younger and because they've got, you know, sort of more life, you know, sort of challenges that they're needing to address. Yeah, that would be the main things that I can think of.
What about those women who are recovering from a recurrence of cancer? Mm. So cancer for the second time.
Yeah.
You know, they've survived that first big life-threatening illness only to find out, you know, that they've got cancer is back.
Yeah.
How can we as clinicians support those people?
Yeah, I think that's just an even greater level of challenge because what's happened is that their worst fears have been confirmed. So then it's much harder to have, you know, hope and a positive, you know, sort of mindset around treatment being effective the second time and then them having a good prognosis. So I think it's really realistic to expect that anxiety will be heightened and that emotional distress will be greater because their psychological resilience is, you know, sort of taken a greater hit. So I think a lot more empathy, you know, a lot more validation and a lot more sort of containment and emotional support from the team is necessary for those women.
A small qualitative study led by Aitken and Hosan from the University of Sydney delved into psychological distress and the quality of life of 15 breast cancer patients. Its participants frequently reported psychological distress and a reduction in quality of life, with the most commonly endorsed stressors in the study being chemotherapy trauma, 46%, and loss of identity, 40%. Over half of the breast cancer survivors also reported a drop in self-esteem, feeling unattractive to partners and embarrassed by their breasts.
Can we talk more about body image and self-esteem, which you mentioned earlier? How do they present and manifest in patients in that post-treatment phase?
Yeah. So body image concerns, particularly around the women's cancer space, is really common. You know, if we think just generally about women, you know, who haven't experienced cancer treatment, you know, body image concerns affect a significant proportion of the population anyway. But then with treatment for breast cancer or gynecological cancer in particular, they impact, you know, some of the core areas of a woman's sense of identity, femininity, self-worth, and impact, you know, sort of core roles that women play, you know, in their families, in society. And there's a lot of value placed on breasts, hair, weight, shape, you know, for value in our society. So some really common things that women might struggle with are feelings of shame, you know, about changes in their body, particularly if they've had breast surgery, if they've had, for example, with gynecological cancer, if they've had an ostomy formed. There might be also weight changes that have happened because of treatment. But body image is not just about our perception of how we look. It's our sort of internal, you know, evaluation of our body and its functioning as a whole and what that means. So it also impacts your sense of identity, you know, and the roles that you play, what your body can do, how well it can care for your family, how well you can work, your brain functioning, all of that kind of thing. So, yeah, so there can be shame, there can be guilt, you know, feeling like your body's let you down. There can be fear, you know, about anxiety, about, you know, not recovering and not being able to regain those important things in your life. There can be avoidance, you know, about going out in public, you know, swimming. Summer is often a real difficult time for women because you can't cover up as much. Yeah, there can also be difficulties in intimate relationships because how you feel about your body affects how comfortable you're going to be being intimate with your partner.
You mentioned a fear of rejection. Yeah. How do you empower a patient to have control and confidence in that circumstance?
Yeah, I think that's quite an involved, you know, question. I think there's different levels and it probably depends on the patient. I think as a clinician, you know, for the people listening to this podcast and where they can start from is, you know, talking to the patient about what their concerns are, you know, what their fears are. And then, you know, sort of evaluating maybe how significant that fear might be. Sometimes it might be reassuring them, you know, that these can improve with time. It might be about referring them to someone who can help them unpack and understand, you know, sort of what that fear is about, its origins, you know, the things that are maintaining that, you know, sort of negative thinking patterns or beliefs or, you know, avoidance that might be perpetuating that fear, and, you know, ways that can help them, I suppose, value their body in other ways than, you know, just their appearance.
How should clinicians skill patients in navigating these body image issues that our patients have?
Yeah. So different things that clinicians can do. It might be about addressing physical issues. So, for example, if patients have pain, you know, maybe a referral to an exercise physiologist or a physio if there's difficulties with stiffness or joint pain or mobility or fatigue. Referral to a dietitian, it can be helpful about, you know, sort of weight and health, nutrition. But I think encouraging a positive, you know, sort of, you know, view of what they've achieved and what their body has done. So encouraging, you know, a reflection on their strengths, things that they've actually achieved through their treatment that their body has done for them. Sometimes I talk with patients about the idea of there being post-traumatic growth. That cancer takes a lot from you and there can be long-lasting effects of it that may not be able to change. But sometimes we reflect on what has your body been able to do through this that you never thought was capable? What have you achieved through this that you didn't realise you could do when you first started, you know, sort of this journey? And sometimes that positive reflection helps to balance out, you know, the negatives, giving them a space to express those emotions. You know, sort of looking at those beliefs and those thoughts and reflecting on those positives and then specific physical things that might be helpful.
Should partners or the patient's support circle be part of these conversations, or is it more critical for the patient to seek their own support, navigate their own way as they go through cancer treatments?
Yeah, I think it's crucial, you know, for their support network to be involved as much as a patient is comfortable with, you know, and obviously it's with their consent. But what we know from research is that the quality of a person's social support directly influences how they cope with treatment. And that's why we have, you know, allied health teams. That's why we have psychosocial support, because a person's not just a body with their medical illness. They're a person, you know, mind, body, relationships. And as relational beings, you know, our nervous system is responsive to our attachment network. So we gain safety from safe, secure relationships. And so increasing safety, addressing any breakdowns in relationships, helping partners or family members understand what's going on for their person, and having ways, specific ways that they can support them, then helps create that sense of, you know, emotional safety that then creates, you know, a better healing environment for the patient.
The World Cancer Research Fund has developed a list of recommendations to reduce cancer risk and recurrence, representing a package of healthy lifestyle choices. A study by Harris, Bergvist and Wolk looked at the effectiveness of these recommendations, primarily among postmenopausal women. They found women who met 6 to 7 recommendations had a 51% decreased risk of breast cancer compared to women who met 0 to 2 recommendations.
At MARTA, we offer a Living Well After Cancer program.
Yes, we do.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. It's for women who've completed curative treatment for breast or gynecological cancer. So it's specifically for women who are in that survivorship phase and they're no longer undergoing active treatment. They might be on maintenance therapies. So it's a six-week program, and for 2 hours each week, we take a topic that's really relevant for women, you know, sort of in this space, and look at information that can help them. So the kind of topics, you know, that we cover are redefining values after finishing cancer treatment. People often find that there's a significant shift in what's important to them after they've been through such a life-changing event. And by having a chance to take a step back and think about what's important to me now, what's no longer important, you know, how do I want to define, you know, sort of that roadmap or that compass direction that I want to go in now, helps to then crystallise, you know, sort of the things that they want to do for themselves. We talk about making the shift from other management to self-management. So that's one of the big adjustments that has to happen when a person's diagnosed with cancer, is that they lose a lot of autonomy and control over their life, and that's now in the hands of their medical team. And there's collaboration there, but part of the shift back in this adjustment period is making that shift away from the medical team providing that direction and that support, and the person taking that on for themselves. So we talk about values. We do a lot of, you know, providing a safe space to express, you know, how they're feeling. And our feedback from the women always has said the thing that they valued most was having a safe space with women who understand what it's been like to help them feel normal. We also look at some practical, you know, strategies for optimizing nutrition, sleep, stress management, exercise, because we know that building up the body's physical strength then cultivates a more positive sense of your body, even if there are some physical changes which can't be, you know, can't be modified. We also then look at some, you know, topic areas like managing fears around recurrence, body image, you know, so interpersonal communication.
So it's a new normal? Is that a phrase that you would use?
There is debate.
Is there? Oh.
if you do a Google search of, you know, life after cancer, this is a phrase that comes up a lot. But I've talked with women in our program and we said, you know, this idea of the new normal, and there are mixed reactions to it. There are some women who say, I hate that term. Mm. And a couple of women have said, I prefer to think about it as life beyond cancer.
Why do you think that the new normal is not...
Yeah.
Is not welcomed because it's not normal, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think it might feel a bit cliched, you know, a bit patronizing. So I'd be cautious, you know, sort of in there. It is that sort of coming to this new sense of what life is like, and what's going to be my reality after this. So it's true, but yeah, maybe using that term cautiously.
You've given us a lot to consider.
Yeah.
How can we as clinicians ensure that we're not overwhelming the patient with, you know, with the information that we're giving? What can we do to support them psychologically during this time?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. You know, what we know from research is something like 25 to 30% of people after finishing treatment for cancer will experience at some point some degree of psychological distress. You know, the normal trajectory might be, you know, sort of that recovery, emotional recovery process, you know, actively in the first 6 to 12 months, but people say up to 2 years. One patient said to me that her oncologist had said, for every round of chemo, you want to anticipate a month of recovery time. So it may be much longer than what people anticipate. So I think as clinicians, giving accurate information about what to expect. You know, I'm not sure how much routinely it might be educated. There may be more focus on the treatment period, but really giving, you know, sort of dedicating time to give, you know, psychoeducation about what that, you know, adjustment period after treatment might look like. then, you know, things to do, I think it comes back to the safety of that relationship. So, you know, the quality of that, you know, emotional security that you can cultivate with that patient, you know, the level of that rapport will then influence their safety, their sense of, you know, ability to be able to open up if they are having difficulties. So I think normalizing and validating, creating a safe space to express concerns, and then knowing, you know, options. So I think some things to look out for, you know, sort of more acute, you know, sort of clinical distress where that person might need referral to a specialist. You know, obviously if they're, you know, acutely distressed, you know, really emotionally, but there's not seeming to be progress in that. You know, it's like shifting from acute grief through to, you know, a grieving process, is that there is actually change over time. If you're not seeing that, if a person seems stuck, then they might need help.
In the breast cancer space, we follow up women for 5 to 10 years. Constant, you know, scans, we call it scansiety. Often we'll see psychological distress in, you know, the 5 years, 10 years, as those years tick over. Sometimes it doesn't subside. What's your advice for clinicians with women who are struggling year after year?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend at that point to refer them to a psychologist,
yeah,
or to talk to them about what you're observing, you know, again, you know, reassuring them that this is normal. But what it might mean is that they might need specialised, you know, sort of advice and guidance in how to help them move, you know, sort of through this and achieve, you know, some peace and some resolution about what they're struggling with. So that would definitely be my suggestion.
Right.
Thank you so much, Arwen. Really interesting insights on the social and emotional challenges for women after cancer treatment. Thank you.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
Before we go, we just want to introduce you to a little segment called The Checkup.
Now, don't panic. This is about finding out about Arwen, the medical professional, and the person as well. So we have 5 quick questions.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. I'll try to be quick.
Away you go.
How do you want patients to see you?
I would love patients to see me as someone who is warm, friendly, who makes them feel safe.
If a genie could grant you one wish, what would it be?
Could I live in Italy for a year?
Go forever, Arwen. Why just a year?
How would you describe your handwriting?
A mess.
Like it's all of us.
Downhill.
What is your superstition?
Oh, do I have a superstition? I really don't know.
It's okay. And if you weren't doing this, what would you be doing?
Oh, this is something that I think psychologists, maybe all people, fantasize about, because, you know, when you tell someone that you're a psychologist, then you get, oh, there's all these questions. Can you read my mind? Oh, are you doing therapy on me now? So we have decoy professions when you're socializing. So mine is I would be a florist. I get to play with flowers all the time and make beautiful things.
No follow-up questions for the florist?
No, they don't talk back. But I remind myself that I would get bored, because I actually do like talking to people.
And you've done a great job today, Arwen. Thanks again.
Thank you.
For listeners at home or in the car or having a well-deserved break between patients, thank you for tuning in.
Join us for our next episode, where we will continue exploring women's health.
See you next time on Smarter.